Welcome to the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast. I am your hostess, Natalie Ross, and this week's guest is Asali. Asali has also gifted y'all a free grief journey spiral tarot spread. You can use it with tarot cards or oracle cards. And it takes you through 5 steps of your grief journey. You can get that at dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret. And I hope you enjoy this episode. I'll be back at the end to share how you can get that grief journey spread again. Welcome to the show, Asali.
Hi.
So before we jump into our invocation, I just want to ask you, what tea are you drinking right now? What tea are you drinking today?
Awesome. So I started off with some mugwort, rosemary, and rose. And then I added some marshmallow and fennel because I was very loud screaming at Beyonce. And so now I needed to recover.
So you put some stuff in there to help soothe your throat.
Yes.
Cool. So before we get into our conversation, will you lead us on an invocation, please?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's the new moon in Aries today, and so, you know, it's all that fiery energy. And so wherever you are, if you're able to take a moment and really root down, whether you're standing, sitting, driving, you don't have to close your eyes. Please don't close your eyes when you're driving. And just be really present in your body at this time and really tap into your power centers. So we're looking at and we're feeling right at the root. And so you just want to send all the love to your root. That's where the ancestors are. That's where your power is. That's where your will is. That's where your foundation is. So just feel the energy there. Whatever it feels like, send light to it. If it hurts, if it's tense, if it's dark, if it's heavy, send light to it. Let the light grow like a sun being born. Just feel that center of your creativity, of your love, of your power. Now let that light travel. Let that little sun in you grow and grow and radiate energy to the rest of you. Just feel that energy just moving. It's hitting up your thighs, and at the same time, it's moving up your belly, moving into the knees and into the chest. Let it grow with every breath. Maybe it's in your shoulders now and tingling your toes. This is the light that's always there. This is the light that's always there. Ashe. Thank you.
Thank you. That was pleasurable.
You felt good.
Very good. So something that I'm super curious about you, and I thought would be a fun place to start, is you call yourself Asali Earthwork, and you've mentioned that earthwork, you know, healing is so deeply rooted and connected with the earth, and I'd just like to hear more about what that means for you, what that earthwork connection with healing means to you.
I actually arrived at that name during this beautiful, beautiful meetup of Black women. And it was Black Women Get Rooted, and we were in a circle, and we were naming ourselves. One of the activities we were doing for that day is writing down our names. And I didn't have a Sali yet, but I just heard this voice inside me that sounded like me saying, "I'm an earth worker." I had no clue what that was supposed to mean. And so over the years, that has settled into, I am one who gets grounded in the earth. I am one who works with, you know, the healing modalities of the earth, whether it's, you know, literally digging my toes into the earth or working with plants or working with crystals. And also being physically in this world, because a lot of wellness and healing, you know, messaging can be very removed from this world. And it's always about the higher plane.
Upper chakras too, right?
Exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, I do my work here in this place, in this dimension, and I connect with the divine. Yes. And I connect with the future. Yes. But earth worker means I'm centered. I'm here. I'm in my community. I'm working with the tangible and the reality, because we can't escape it, and because it is the source of our need for healing, and so we can't ignore it. So it helps ground me in the here and now to call myself an earth worker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that's where it's coming from. That's what it's grown to be. And it's always an evolving meaning behind the name. But I'm always, it's expanding every day, and I'm just excited to see where it goes next.
It's beautiful. I love that you got to hear this voice inside of you. Did you feel like completely trusting of that, or what did you feel?
Yes, I'm grateful that I was able to trust it. I had been doing a lot of self-work at that point, and I was in this space that was so beautifully facilitated. And so I felt safe, I felt held, I felt supported. And so when that voice came up, it was like, oh, okay. I accept. I don't know what it means, but I accept. And sometimes it's like that, and you don't have to figure out where you're going immediately. Sometimes it's, you just have to accept your truth in that moment.
Bam. I think so many people want to, quote, figure it all out and know where they're going that they can't accept that truth in the moment. So thanks for laying it out.
That's a good point. Yeah.
I mean, I know I get caught up in that, and I'm like, but is this, where's it going to go? Should I do this? Should I choose this? Do I do that? You know, I don't know. Do you feel that way?
Oh, absolutely. And so much of my healing journey with Oshun has been Oshun being like, you're okay right where you are with what exactly is around you. And I remember being at this, I'm grateful for all these groups I was in. And so it was another event for Black Women Get Rooted in Austin. And, you know, we were supposed to come to the circle and offer a gift to the circle. And I started stressing, like, what am I going to do? I don't have anything but my tarot cards. I don't know what I'm going to do. And Oshun was basically like, I need you to stop talking for a moment and feel. And what ended up happening is I went outside, I picked some flowers, I went into my bag, I had some beautifully smelling anointing oil, I had Florida water that I'd carried for, I'm not sure what reason, but this was probably the reason. And there was water available in a bowl. And so I asked for water, a bowl, and I put the plants and the oil. And in the, you know, following the practice of Ifa, there is this sacred water called Omiero. And it is made by the priests and priestesses of our practice. And, you know, as a novice, I'd always been empowered by my teachers to, you know, it might not be on that same level, but you can always anoint yourself. And so I made this sacred water for our circle, and everyone was like, I totally feel this. And it was such a moment of, look, you are stressing that you didn't have anything to offer, that you didn't have what you needed, that it always had to be this elaborate ritual. When, you know, and you, if you had stayed in that space, you would never have come to this moment, and there would never have been this connection in the circle, and you wouldn't be speaking these words and passing around the sacred water and connecting with all these people. And sometimes we get caught up in wanting it all to make sense, wanting it all to be perfect, wanting the big ritual and having all the fancy implements. But I have learned over and over, what you have around you is enough. What you have in you is enough.
Mm-hmm. And what a poignant story to just illustrate how when you're worrying, you can't see what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So I know from talking with you in the self-care club that your mother passed. And so you're not just that's the only thing that would bring grief into your life, but, you know, you're no stranger to grief. And I know that grieving is something that is important to you. Do you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. It's been my my greatest teacher this past year. I truly believe that the process of grieving has fundamentally changed my DNA. I don't think, feel, or sense in the same way. And it's been so profound to be open to that experience and to be open to the waves of that experience. And because of my practice being what it is, I spend a lot of time online and I write online. And one of the blessings has been being brave enough to write my vulnerability and write my grief. And without fail, you know, that connection is created. 'Cause we are never, ever the only ones grieving. Mm. And so when you're grieving, you're connecting to this collective of other grievers and other mourners. And I like to think that we heal each other every time we're open about it. Every time we feel into the grief, we're sending each other, like, giving and receiving light. 'Cause it's one of those, you know, everyone's going to feel it. And so it just felt profound to be part of that particular collective and consciousness. And I'm thankful for the experience, despite being very sad about my entry into that particular portal. Right. But I can honestly say it's been my greatest teacher, and I'm grateful for the lessons learned.
Mm. So did you connect with that collective mostly through, as you said, the online writing and work you do?
Absolutely. And so that was more of the feedback, but I think the moments of stillness and being alone and being just devastated and sad in bed, weeping, I always had a sense that I wasn't alone. And it wasn't so much always, you know, I always have my ancestors and I always have my guides, but I could feel, you know, pain that wasn't my own, and it didn't hurt. It actually helped me heal because there was that connection of someone understands. And it's so unfortunate that someone understands, but God, what a gift that we have each other in this moment.
Do you feel like that gave you permission to really go there with your emotions and your grieving?
Yes. And I credit, again, my teachers who, you know, told me that the first part of practice is always going to be your ancestors. And so there was this sense of trust that, you know, beyond this realm of life, in death, there is so much more out there. And so that had already laid the foundations to accept that there was more to, you know, what we know right now. And so connecting to that and really giving into that space was easier when I could trust that, you know, my mother is now my ancestor. Mm-hmm. And she's with them and she's being held by them. She's not alone. And doesn't it make sense for me also to be witnessed and be supported and not be alone in this grieving space? Mm-hmm. So just mirrored, they mirrored each other kind of perfectly.
Yeah, they definitely did. And I love that about the ancestors. Can you take us deeper into how ancestors played a role in your grieving process?
Absolutely. My grandmother has always been the ancestor whose voice, energy, face I just recognize in moments of spirit. And so it was such a moment of healing for me to understand that even though I lost my mother, she was receiving her daughter. Mm-hmm. And so it's harder to feel selfish about losing my mom because she was receiving her daughter. And so that took me, you know, to a really healing place. And it still makes me cry today. I'm kind of like tearing up.
I know, it's making me feel a little like, oh.
Yeah. Mm. And so that's the knowledge that helped me be a lot, you know, less selfish of that process. Because that's the instinct to be like, no, she was mine. Why did you take her, you know?
Yeah. Why did you do this to me?
Exactly. Why did she have to go? Mm-hmm. But understanding that, you know, she went home. And her mother gets to rejoice in her again. And so it's really hard to feel all the way bad about that. You can be sad, yeah, but you're not going to be like angry. It's harder to be angry with that. Mm-hmm.
Such an expansive perspective too. I mean, you know, it's getting out of that selfish place of why me, like really victimhood, you know, of like, can't believe this happened to me and all that.
You have the right to feel the full breadth of that.
Totally.
Like, you know, you're bad for not letting your those you've lost go home. It's just that, you know, it doesn't cancel one out. It's more like they exist in the same place and that's okay. I can be angry and sad and also really happy for her.
Yeah.
And really excited for the new realms of healing she'll experience in that space, for the new realms of healing and connection in our relationship we'll have now that she has this other understanding. So it's, these things exist in the same place. And it was really important for me not to rob myself of either experience. Like, I could be pissed. And also I could be like, at the same time, wow, you know, that's really beautiful that you get to have that. Because I remember when her mom died, how devastated she was. And there was this profound moment or moments of constantly understanding just what she was going through, because now I've lost my mom. Mm. And, you know, she was very Christian. And so she, you know, her practice of ancestors was not, you know, it wasn't there. I think it was in the bones because, you know, but I don't think she really spent any time with it. And so it was healing for me to feel this for her and to feel this happiness that she couldn't feel when she lost her mom. So it felt like I was healing her process as well.
Yes. And that reminds me, and part of why I brought that up earlier about the just feeling that, like, why me? I mean, it's so powerful. I think sometimes people don't realize that there's an opportunity and potential beyond that phase, and they can get fixated there. And like you said, you've kind of helped heal your mother's experience of that by embracing that fuller spectrum and expansive view on this of, you know, not othering any of those feelings and just not fixating on any of them either. I mean, maybe you did it. Like, we all are human, and maybe at certain points you just like feel like you're in a hole you're never going to get out of. But that potential is there.
Yeah.
So, you know, just from your perspective, then what is healing?
Everyday work.
Say that again.
Everyday work.
Beautiful. Expand on that.
Because there's always something more to do.
A never-ending process of joy and love.
Never-ending process. Because I remember when I was just starting out and I'd make a breakthrough. And then my teachers or my ancestors or my guides would be like, okay, now here's what you do next. And I'd be like, just got done.
Can I freaking rest for a minute?
Really, I gotta do more work? And they're like, you don't even understand how bad it is. Let's keep going. So it's that constant work. And it is daily practice. And it's also the big deals, right? So you can have these daily intentional moments of healing. Maybe you sit and close your eyes and breathe. Maybe you make yourself tea. And maybe you plan a trip out to the ocean and you spend the day there. Mm-hmm. And maybe you just dream. I think dreaming is such a healing space if it's cultivated to be so.
Like night dream, day dream, all dreams.
All dreams. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you can make the space intentional, you know, get your mugwort and your lavender and set intentions for sweet healing dreams. And for me, when I was grieving, actually, that was the primary space of conversation.
In your dreams.
Right. Mm-hmm. That was this primary space of conversation. And I'd have whole intricate dreams with my mother. And at the end, there would always be this moment of, oh, when I wake up, you're not going to be here. And it'd be like this shrug, like, yeah. But I'm so thankful that I had that space. And I still dream about her nearly every Friday night.
Ooh, why Friday?
Because Saturday was like, you know, her religious day. So I've always had that connection with Saturdays are sacred. No matter what you believe, no matter what I believe now, I know that Saturdays are mine to do healing work, mine to do rest work. And so every morning I wake up, you know, nearly every morning I'd wake up with her as my first thought. And it would be sad and beautiful at the same time. And when my grandmother died, it was her.
On Friday nights?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so it's just been this really beautiful continuation of the cycle.
So those conversations with your mom, where were they going? Or, you know, I feel like there's something there that wants to be shared. I don't know what it is, but...
They were really very ordinary, actually. It wasn't like we were coming to a place of profound it would literally be everyday occurrences. Like it would be, we're driving to the mall or we're sitting by the ocean and we're going through a regular day like any other we'd had in our lives. And it would just be talking about just, you know, everyday things. And I think that's what made it so healing. It was because it felt like, well, she was there. She's there in my everyday, and she'll continue to be there in my everyday. So that doesn't change. It's not so much about, you know, we had this aha moment in dream space. We're just hanging out like we used to. And that doesn't have to change because one person is not corporeal anymore.
Oh, that's awesome.
Freaking fantastic.
Yeah. Love that. And it really points to just how simple it is to enjoy someone's presence while they are corporeal.
Absolutely, there's magic in the ordinary.
Beautiful. Thanks for sharing that. So, you mentioned to me before we started that you were wanting to talk a little bit about the wounded and tired healer. And since we're talking about what healing is, I think this would be a good point to jump in there. Healing is this everyday ongoing process, as you say. So what's the cycle or experience with this wounded and tired healer aspect that you're feeling?
I'm very clear about the fact that I'm not perfect. In fact, I pulled an oracle card today that was basically said the title for the oracle card was Imperfection, and I was like, that's
Yay.
right.
I know, and if anyone has ever followed me for very long, they'll see how much what I do is not perfect either. So I just want to reflect that so strong. Like, perfection is so overrated.
Ashe, yeah, no, it's nonsense. It doesn't exist.
Right.
But there's this idea that can sometimes hold, people's attention that, healers should be perfect and they have this together. And because they work with herbs and are working with natural products, they don't get sick, they're not sad. And I'm just like, yeah, none of that is true with me. I am definitely always working on my mental health. I have definitely dragged my way back from suicidal thoughts and ideation. I am still working through bouts of depression. I am always grieving. I am constantly finding new ways to, to soothe myself, to self-soothe. And I'm, pretty honest about that. And I'm like, here, let me put all this out there, and hopefully someone connects with it and finds a way to heal as well. And so, I was recently writing about the magician,
In
and in
tarot, just for anyone who's like, what do you mean the magician, right?
right.
Okay, cool.
So I was writing about the magician in the tarot, and they're this powerful figure, and they seem to have it all together, and they're sending energy from the divine all the way
Right.
down into the earth, and they're a badass, and I'm just like, I'm tired just looking at you. And but I kept pulling the card, right? And so something was like, you are the magician, and I'm like, I'm not, I'm really tired, I would like to nap. And it was so much about being the magician. When you're tired, when you're broken, when you're in pain, you are still the magician. Because you're not working with, fully developed elements. The magician on their table, they have a cup, a sword, a staff, and a coin. And those are the pieces of the tarot, right?
And the
And they're
elements, right?
the elements, and they're not complete. They are in purely potential mode, so they're not complete. You do not have to be complete to work your magic. You do not have to be fully there and fully formed to work the magic. You don't have to be working with fully formed pieces. You're putting your broken pieces together to create something new, and that's beautiful. And so that's the idea of like the wounded healer. It's like, I don't have to be fully formed. I don't have to be fully healed to have something to share, to have something to offer to someone else, to have something to offer to myself. I don't have to be fully formed. And releasing that and forgiving myself of that need to be perfect has freed me up for so much more. It's just freed me up for so much more.
I want to pick apart here a little bit the, idea of completion and then wholeness, because I hear in what you're saying two things at once of like, you don't have to be complete to do the healing, but I also feel like that in itself makes you complete and whole. So it's this kind of funny paradox. Do you feel that, or?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the state of that's the state of magic, right? It's
Right.
never working in dualities.
Right.
Like two completely opposing ideas can exist at the same time.
That
And
paradox.
That paradox, like this is what makes sense. It's not even a paradox when we talk about this. It's what makes sense. And just like in the grieving where I was like as happy as I could be and as devastated I could be, like those all exist in the same space. And you kind of have to bend your mind.
Or like
sometimes
give your
understand.
mind a different job to do something while you go be the paradox.
Right. Exactly. But I think that the easiest thing you can do is release and just accept that as the truth. This makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense for these two things to agree. I am wholly imperfect. I am wholly incomplete and complete as well.
And completely whole.
completely whole. And so, you know, it doesn't have to be separated. I mean, that's the constant state. We're always in transition spaces, whether or not we're paying attention to them. You know, some portals are, you know, call our attention a little louder than others, but we're always moving through this. Every, you know, the you are now is not the who you were 1 second ago.
Wait, what? No, just kidding.
No, seriously, like, you're right. Because, you know, you're always growing into a new wisdom. So you can never actually, we move in cycles. So you never actually move into the same spaces the same way.
Right. And time is so weird.
It's so weird and whiny. And this might be the mugwort talking. Because mugwort is just not a linear herb. So I want to just clarify, I am sipping on mugwort tea.
Awesome. And my house is surrounded by mugwort.
Yeah, it doesn't do, mugwort likes to see around corners and go back where, the same way it came from and be in a different place at the same time. So, you know, if I'm sounding all timey-wimey,
yeah.
Let's all blame the mugwort and keep it moving.
Well, you know, I think that this idea of we have to embrace the paradox and just accept that there are infinite truths is one of the biggest kind of things we're wrapping our heads around. And it's really a job that we need to drop into our hearts for. But as a collective, I feel like this is kind of one of the big shifts that's happening in so many spaces. And so, you know, this point about mugwort is so interesting too, because herbs and nature facilitate that so well. And I want to know, but from your perspective, you know, how else have herbs helped you on your healing journey, and what, you know, what's your relationship with them?
So they, you know, as we talked before and I told you that, you know, rosemary really got my life together. And so they're that constant friend. They're that constant, constant friend. And it's so huge and massive to me that I can have a remedy for anything I'm feeling. Anything I'm feeling. There is a remedy for it out there in nature. And I can, and I think it's just so freaking cool. You know, it's not even, I'm not even trying to like have a deep, deep conversation. I'm just on a base level. It's so freaking cool that when my heart is hurting, I can reach for hawthorn and rose. When I've got too much tension, I can bring out some kava. When I scream too much at a, you know, watching TV, I can, you know, grab some fennel and marshmallow. So just the generosity of their medicine is just, it challenges me to kind of step up, you know, to step up to that level of magic, to step up to that level of generosity and medicine. So, yeah, I'm in a moment of like, man, this is really, really cool.
What is Asali the herb? What's her medicine?
Asali me or
yeah, Asali you,
okay.
you as a plant.
Me as a plant, I'm a sunflower.
Obviously.
If all the yellow was not a hint.
Yeah, and I'm saying this from here on your Skype is the heart of a sunflower here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have always, I just challenge anyone to look in the face of a sunflower in full bloom and try not to smile.
Right?
Just try not to smile. I actually double dare you. It is just such a plant of joy and happiness, and they follow the sun, which I've always found, you know, as a child, I just found that really, just really cool before I even understood, you know, what I was supposed to do with, you know, that kind of magic and herbs and all that. I just thought it was really cool. They literally follow the sun. And I just got this deck, the Tarot de Saint Croix, and the sun card is sunflowers. And one of the messages in there in the little book is like, you have to think about how much of that beautiful sun magic you have to absorb as a plant to grow 6 feet tall and still be beautiful and just want more and more and more. And I was like, wow, that's magic, right? Like, I want to absorb all that energy, all that goodness, and grow 6 feet tall. You know, I'm short, by the way. So it would be metaphorically growing tall. But to feel like that tall and to be that energized and to be that open to the light that you grow 6 feet tall, I mean, that's sunflowers are so cool.
Wow, and what does that say about receiving and nourishment?
You have to allow it. You just have to allow it. And it's so much work. And I think, you know, as you're working through healing and you recognize that you need healing and you want it so bad, I don't think that we talk enough about the process of even opening ourselves up to that. And so that was one of my pitfalls, is that I didn't figure out that I needed to learn to be open to receiving light.
Can you take us back there to that version of you before you knew that and tell us a little bit about how you felt and what you were thinking?
It was frustration is a good word for it, because it's, you know, there's nothing worse than knowing what you need and not being able to get there. Because I'd gone past the stage of, you know, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's happening. I knew what was going on.
What was
I
going on?
knew I was a mess. I was not internally alive. I was seeking justification for myself and other people. I needed mirrors everywhere. Not literal mirrors, but like metaphorical, like mirrors in other
Right.
people.
That outside approval.
Exactly. I was devastated. I was sad. I was always, you know, I was harsh at the same time. I was super vulnerable and super hurt. And so when I moved from that space of kind of being okay with that and fooling myself to thinking, oh, I'm so powerful, I'm so mean, I don't let anybody in. When I moved past that and I recognize, okay, you're not okay. This is a mess. You need something different.
Yeah, and I just want to go back before we go forward because that there's such this huge thing of seeking the outside approval and yet not letting anyone in. That's so isolating. And was the not letting anyone in for fear that they might see just how much deserving of disapproval you were?
Yeah, and like I wasn't worth it.
Right.
And also, it was the sh I was certain that I was going to be hurt, because it had been before. And you know, I started out in the sciences, and if something has been repeated multiple times in different situations, then it must be true.
Make a
And
theory, right?
exactly, I had been hurt multiple times in different situations, and the one thing that was common in all of that is that I let someone in. And so I knew it had to be true. At the same time, I desperately wanted it. I wanted that approval. I wanted that justification from everybody else. And that's not how it works. That's not what I needed to be open to. That's not what I needed to receive. And so, you know, grateful for the teachers who introduced me to Oshun. And Oshun was like, the only thing you need to be open to receive is your own love.
Ugh.
And that's exactly how I felt, by the way. It's like, ugh. And that was the most difficult thing to hear because I didn't like my love, you know?
Ooh, why?
Because I the only way I'd expressed it and felt it had hurt me.
Was it really love then?
It wasn't really love. Or, you know, I think it was, but it wasn't so much that I was loving myself as that I was choosing to, try to love others into submission of myself. And that wasn't going to work. And so I needed to love myself completely separate from how I was loving anyone else. For a while. And to really know and share that with me first and forgive myself and, you know, understand that all this I was trying to give out had belonged to me first. And part of the reason it was hurtful, you know, inevitably, when it was shared with others is because it had never learned to develop inside me first.
Right. And, you know, when we talked in the self-care club, I think you said something about you got to give from the overflow. And
right.
Was that kind of that transition of giving from an empty cup to giving from the overflow?
Absolutely. I truly believe that your love's got to incubate inside you for a while before you try to share it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think of like the Queen of, I'm going to do tarot references.
Please do. Yeah, we'll get into tarot more in a little bit too.
The Queen of Pentacles is usually found holding a coin that she's gazing at adoringly. And we know that she's the giver, she's the sharer, she's the nurturer. But I just love that she's always, she looks at what her creation is first and, you know, kind of holds it for herself before she shares it out. And so with love, it has to incubate inside you first completely. It's like a baby. It's got to grow inside you first before you try to let it out into the world.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think fundamental to that is if you're not willing to let yourself be overflowing,
mm-hmm.
You're probably moving too fast and aiming for that outside approval. I feel like it's so interwoven in that. And like, I also say this with a caveat because some people are in situations where it's, I don't know. I mean, when you're raising like a kid or four kids or you work and you're raising kids and you're running a business, like when do you have time to fill up again, you know? But
yeah.
At the same time, at least exploring that option, I think, is super crucial. I don't even know where I'm going here, but I'm like, because I got all distracted by this caveat, but yeah.
It's an important one because, you know, one of the things that, you know, it's important for healing to be is accessible.
Right.
And healing needs to be as accessible to somebody who can pay thousands of dollars to go on a retreat and just sit by the ocean as it is for the single mother with multiple kids working three jobs, to the trans woman doing sex work, to the teacher in a school. Like it has to be, mm-hmm. Healing has to be accessible to everybody for it to be any kind of radical or matter.
Right. And okay. Yeah. Go on. I'm just getting fired up, but go on.
And so, you know, it's not about things. It's about what's already inside you. And the reality is, no matter what it is we're doing, it'll suffer if we're not overflowing. It will. And so we are empowered to take those moments, even if they're quick. Because again, like, the magic is inside you. You are the vessel for your magic. You are all the elements of this earth in one vessel. So even if it's a moment, that's why I was like, even if it's a moment to just breathe into your body for a little bit, even if it's a moment to just witness what you're feeling, what your body feels like, what you need, sometimes even that recognition can move you closer to getting you what you need. Mm-hmm. The thing is, we just can't ignore it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or else it'll create a situation where you got to face it.
Right. No, that's just reality, right?
So, you know, something I love about tarot, and maybe you have a perspective on this, is how, like you said, the Queen of Pentacles offers this energy of someone holding on to that which they have created before they give it out to the world. And I love that tarot cards give us that opportunity to kind of tune into different ways of being in the world. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you feel about tarot?
Yeah, I find tarot to be a mirror for the experience, whatever your definition of the experience is. It's a mirror. It's showing you all kinds of potential. It's showing you what to do and what not to do, right? And it's also affirming you. Sometimes it's not so much I need the tarot to solve my problems. I need the tarot to help me believe that this is what I'm seeing.
Especially if you have a new crush.
Right. And so it can help from, you know, you get the Two of Cups and you got your new crush, or, you know, you're devastated. Here's the Three of Swords. Mm-hmm. Like, stop ignoring that. You need to deal with this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I find it to be a useful mirror that then offers a possibility for this, for the next steps.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And the next steps are super important. Do you read reversals, or how do you approach that?
I do. I also empower myself to turn the card over when I feel that that's right. I do read reversals, and sometimes they're important. They're kind of like the warning sign, like something is out of balance here. And also, I also allow myself to be tender and compassionate enough to turn the card over and read it upright so that I can access, so I can more easily access the medicine.
Right. Cause it's not saying you're doomed. It's like, hey, this is something you need to look at honestly. And I love that you turn it around. Yeah.
Cause it's we're human, and I'm sensitive. And sometimes if I'm already trying to deal with a difficult message, if it's shaped in a way that is harsh and blunt, as sometimes a reversal can feel like, sometimes the simple act of turning it over doesn't take away what I was going to hear from it, but it just helps the medicine go down. It's like adding honey to something that doesn't taste so good. It doesn't take away from the medicine. It just helps it settle better.
That sweetness.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, it can be very disempowering if you're reading something and feeling like, wow, I fucked up. How bad of me. Like, there's no hope. And, you know, I know reversals can feel like that, and they can be very frustrating in that way.
Yeah, there's nothing like doing a large spread and like 9 out of 10 of those cards are overturned. Like, you're just like, oh, God. And so that moment of, oh, God, you can transmute that, and you turn all your cards over and you find the medicine and the message there. I think that's totally valid. I don't think it lessens the validity of your message. It doesn't lessen the validity of the reading. It's just a different way to look at it, and the way that you're being asked to look at it anyway, because you're trying to get to that balance.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you can turn the card around and you can feel the other side of that energy, the other end of that spectrum or another flavor, it can really help you understand how to move from where you are now.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, you're a card slinger. slinging cards. You do readings for people, and you write about tarot, and you actually do a lot of reviews of tarot decks, especially around queer, trans, people of color friendly decks. Do you want to share some more about what got you started with that?
Absolutely. Racism got me started with that.
Hello, racism.
Yeah, always there, aren't you? And so I was with another femme of color, a friend of mine, very sweet. We were walking into a witchy store, a new age store, and we were looking for tarot decks. And we were looking at their selection, and, you know, we were, though they had a large selection, we were both like, this is limited. And so we straight up asked the proprietor, like, or whoever was there at the time. I don't know if they actually owned the store, but, you know, what's going on? Do you have any decks with people of color? And she got really awkward. And this is, by the way, I want to point out, she had been following us in the store, you know, doing that subtle thing where the people of color walk into the store and we're just going to walk behind them because we don't know what they're doing and we have to question their presence in the space.
Yeah, totally, so not trusting you.
Seeing that microaggression, but we were, you know, bold with it. We were determined to have a good day. And so we asked the question. And so she got real uncomfortable and she said something to the effect of, well, you know, there's just not many cards out there and it's probably because there's just not many, you know, think about who practices and it's mostly... Wow. White people. And it was like this barrage, and I'm standing there like, what?
Wow.
And so,
how did that feel?
That, I mean, it was really, I was angry. And so we picked up a couple of things to buy, and we just put them on the table in front of her. We were like, okay. And we turned around and left the store. And, you know, basically we got into the parking lot and we were both like, well, fuck her, actually. That was such bullshit because, you know, here are two people of color standing in front of you telling you, we practice, we're looking for cars that look like us. Why do you not have them? And so I chose to not believe that. And I went online. And so I started Googling and I ran into eclectic tarot lists and I ran into people reviewing things and Instagram had gotten really started on that stuff. And so I found decks. I found decks that had people of color. I found decks that had queer people. I found, basically, I was looking for my community. And unfortunately, these decks were in the minority. But I knew for a fact that the people who had gotten me into this world were all people of color, were all queer. So I know it's not a matter of who's practicing. It's about the status quo being the default is heteronormativity. The default is whiteness.
Even skinniness.
And skinniness and cis-centricness and able-bodiedness. That's the default in the minds of so many people that the possibility of including everybody else is like, what? That's weird. No. But the presence of these decks, that these few decks that did exist, and the excitement that was felt when we discovered these decks, proved that whole entire trash notion wrong. It really did. And so I started this list, Tarot of the QTPOC, you know, QTPOC, queer, trans, people of color. And the idea was that I would just find decks that, you know, in my opinion, which is not a perfect opinion, weren't tokenizing. So it wasn't like, you know, you had the one black woman in your Queen of Pentacles.
Checked that box.
You know, done. So I found, you know, I try to do that work of finding these decks and reviewing them and telling, you know, telling my story in relation to them and looking at what we find and challenging my own assumptions of what makes a good deck. Like as I grew as well, because decks like the Mythical Goddess Tarot or the Daughters of the Moon Tarot or the Mother Peace Tarot are incredibly cis-centric and trans-exclusionary. And, you know, this is despite the fact that they were such, they're so beloved, right? Because of the work they did for women and women of color. But we have to continue challenging these status quo, these ideas of progressiveness and progression. And so it helped me grow in that work as well. And so I'm really grateful for it. And there's actually, I'm probably saying her name wrong, but Kato, C-A-T-H-O-U, is a femme who reads tarot and is writing for Little Red Tarot right now, a series on fact tarot.
Cool.
And they did this awesome experiment of, you know, trying to figure out, so where are all the fat people in the tarot? If they exist at all, the deck, what cards do they usually represent? And it was a similar experiment to what I'd done before, where I found all the black people in the pentacles and then the strength cards. So she would also find most fat people in the tarot in the pentacles and the empress.
Why? And so, do you know why?
I mean, it's these, I'll speak from
what's your theory?
Blackness. My theory is that this association of people of color as earthy and concerned with the practical stuff and the hard work, right? And strength. What's stronger than a black woman? So we're not allowed to be soft in the cups or logical, excuse me, in the swords. We're just kind of in this realm of abundance and things and material and hard work and just earthiness. And I think that is also very tied to how we see fat people. And the Empress is this, you know, kind of languishing figure, just relaxing in abundance and food and all really fucked up ways of seeing people. And even in decks that are inclusive, this is where they showed up.
Over and over again, it's right?
Over and over again, this is where they showed up.
Wow.
To the point where, like, now I'm, you know, I'm trying to see black women as the high priestess, you know? A fat person is the queen of swords. So, you know, like, let's also, you know, we're working to inclusion. There's been a recent boom, especially in the indie tarot world, these inclusive, beautiful decks. So let's expand what that looks like. Let's put people in different images. Let's place them in different spaces more than because they exist in these spaces.
Right.
Beyond our stereotype, people really do exist in these spaces. So why aren't we showing it?
Right. Right. So what's your favorite deck at the moment? If that's a fair question to ask, because how can you choose one? If you could choose just one.
Oh, gosh. I couldn't. I honestly.
Okay, let's just top three.
Top three. You'd be surprised how hard that is right now. But
it's like asking. Yeah.
These are the decks that I've been most recently impressed with. The Numinous Tarot, which was created by this beautiful, beautiful divine being. And it is just full. It's beautiful. I also really love Dust to Onyx, which is such a powerful ancestral deck. And it's just black faces all throughout. And they're just regal and set in space. So they're here and they're in the future. And it's just an incredible deck. I've also really, really loved the Delta Enduring Tarot and the Next World Tarot, which is such a queer, radical, revolutionary deck. Yeah, those are the ones that have really caught my eye. At least in the last month. That answer will be different next week, and it was definitely different last year.
Cool. So when people are listening to this, caveat, she could be onto a whole new set of favorites. But we'll put those links in the show notes to each of those decks so people can check them out. And also to your blog. Your blog has an amazing, you know, you have all of these reviews on your blog.
Yes, and so I have a page dedicated to this Tarot of the QTPOC series, and it's both reviews and interviews is what I've been getting into recently, and that's been really fun, like looking at the process of these artists and publishers and, you know, as a way of thanking them for doing the work and also, you know, sheer curiosity about what led them to do this work.
Right. Like your story here where you walked in this store and they were like, only white people practice tarot. And you're like, F that up. Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm grateful that I was able to turn like such an ugly moment of racism and my own anger into something that's really grown. And I'm really grateful for, you know, what that list has become and the fact that it's always being shared and people love it. And so I'm just grateful to have been the channel for that, despite that experience.
Right. So what card in the deck would represent that energy to you of being able to transform that anger from a fucked up situation?
Temperance.
Tell us more.
I really wish temperance would be permanently renamed to alchemy. Because yeah. That's what I see it as. It's this constant moving of energy from one form to another, giving and receiving, and being able to shift that until you find that balance where that energy is flowing back and forth. And so I was given this ugly moment of racism. And so the work I did in Temperance is to transform it into, here's where I can find my power here, and also share that with power with other people so that they can find their own way into a healing resource. And so, you know, in many ways, it's not so much about that horrible experience. It becomes this beautiful, it becomes transmuted into this beautiful, you know, cultivation of this list of this community, and it's really helped me grow community, and it's helped me have really incredible conversations and mark my place in the spiritual community as, you know, someone who's doing this work, who's not afraid to call in and call out as necessary.
I love that call in is so important too, as we call out. So super curious, how many decks have you reviewed, do you think? Do you know?
Not without cheating and looking at my deck reviews tag.
Well, it might be too distracting to do that, I don't know, but
yeah.
Take a wild guess.
I think I've definitely had in my hands about 50 decks. That I've bothered to actually take my time with, but I don't think I've ever published all of my reviews is part of the issue. So I really couldn't guess. I'm horrible with estimations.
Okay, that's fine. Fair enough.
Landish number. But I've had a couple of decks and I'm not as much of a collector as some folks are because I get to be pickier about them, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So my focus is if your deck isn't doing a particular thing and a particular work, I really have no time for it. So that helps limit my consumption, but not nearly enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's a lot still to interview. I mean, to interview and review 50 different creations and people. I mean, not every deck was an interview, and not every interview was a review. I don't know. I haven't taken the time to intricately review your website to that depth, but
No, I wouldn't ask anyone to. But like, also part of it is like, you know, I have all these things in my draft folders. I can tell you right now for sure, because I counted because I was frustrated with myself.
For not publishing them.
Exactly. I have at least
'cause they aren't perfect.
Because they aren't perfect. And also because I just feel like I'm not set enough. And so I need to take a little bit of my own medicine, don't I? and just hit publish.
Happens to all of us.
But also it's like this idea that you're holding someone's work. You're holding someone's baby here. You know, at least do it the justice of doing it right.
Yes.
That's what holds me back. So, like, I have, I really want to finish my reviews of, like, the Dust to Onyx and the Next World Tarot and the Delta Enduring Tarot, but, like, and the Numinous. But, like, these are decks that I love so much and I treasure so much that it's actually a block. Because I'm like, this is such profound, beautiful work. Like, I want to match that. I want to step up to them first.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll just reflect back and say that I was reading your reviews and I read, you know, your little blurb about the Numinous deck, and it made me want to go check it out. I was like, wow, that's, you know, it was a glowing, loving review. So I felt the energy of that.
Right. And it's special with that deck, special because I reviewed it before it was even out.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Because the art had just grabbed me, like Noelle Hempel. They're the ones who created the deck. And their art had just grabbed me. And I was like, they were, I think, the first interview I did, because I just messaged them. I was like, oh my gosh, your deck is stunning. I saw it on Tumblr at first. And there was this sun card that was this just black person surrounded by yellow flowers and radiating this fiery energy. And I was like, wow, I have to know what, you know, who this person is that conceived of this. So that's, you know, and I try to, if I don't love it, I'll tell you about it as well. Because I have decks like, I call it the Haitian Tarot, but its official name is the Ghetto Tarot, which I despise. And it's a deck, it's a beautiful deck, but the politics of that deck bother me.
Oh, yeah. Tell us more. I want to, like, can you pull up an image about it?
It's a deck that was created in Haiti and features Haitian people. But a lot of the publicity, the press, went to this white woman who was the photographer who, you know, claimed the conception of it. And then called it the Ghetto Tarot. And wow. I just, like, that bothered it. And no amount of, you know, we're reclaiming the name, we're naming the Ghetto Tarot out of power. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, but as a white person, you don't get to use that name in power because you have historically never used it in power. And you cannot ignore those lineages of oppression. You just can't. And so I just, like, this deck is beautiful. The bodies in it are beautiful. The people in it are beautiful. The Haitian artists who participated in this work are beautiful. But it really bothered me, the idea of, you know, once again, black bodies being used in production of a white person's project, which is historically the history of Haiti. So, like, you cannot ignore these lineages of power and how it works, no matter how, you know, how good you think your work is. And then it all culminated in the name. So I call it the Haitian Tarot. And it's one of those decks that I've always refused to purchase. And I knew I'd never purchase it new. But I had an opportunity. I was offered a used version of it, owned by a black person. So I will soon have it, because I wanted to look at a deck that portrayed black people in beauty and black people in play. You know, the Rider-Waite-Smith imagery is one that I had never connected with because it was very white and very thin and very, you know, het and all of that. Mm-hmm. But it's such the standard nowadays. And so to see black people be, you know, kind of revisioning this and replacing those images in my mind, I think is something precious. I just really didn't like the politics of it.
Yeah, fair enough. And I just pulled it up here real quick to look at it. It is beautiful. That's, yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what your review says.
Yeah, the reviews of it, you know, spoke about the politics, but I'm looking forward to seeing what happens and what changes when I actually have the deck in my hand and I'm not just looking at the politics and I'm looking at the deck, and I want to be open to the recognition of a black face staring at me in every card.
Right.
Just like I felt in Dust to Onyx, and what that looks like. And what secret messages are hidden in there? Because I do believe in our power to marginalized people always find ways to speak to each other, even despite whatever. So looking at seeing what is, you know, what special messages are in it, what's waiting there for, you know, a person of color who picks up this deck, a black person who picks up this deck.
Right. That might be something that, you know, a black person might see that a white person might not ever get. Just from
absolutely.
That. You know, that's something that's interesting, that, you know, even if you interviewed the black people who were involved in the project, like, would they talk about that, it feeling marginalizing, even if it did? Like, would they talk about it? I don't know. And that's, you know, I guess that's still kind of wrapped up in that politics of it and the...
And that's, you know, the complications of the power. Yeah. And, you know, the Artiste Resistance, that's the name of the group that she said she collaborated with. That's who I want to honor when I work with Beck. And, you know, I do not at all resent or hold them responsible for any of the ugly politics.
Right. You know, it might be even interesting in this case to interview them and not even interview the woman who was the photographer.
I've been trying to figure out a way to, like, contact them for it. But, you know, continue speaking that with me into the world.
Yeah.
I would really love that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, go to Haiti. I mean, that's, of course, a very big undertaking. But
if only I could just go to Haiti.
Know, right? So easy. Wow. I know. How do you reach people who live in such a different way from you? You know?
Not even that. Like, just flight money. Like, let's start there.
Flight money. Right. Flight money.
Yeah, I'll find them, but.
Right. Like, are they on Instagram? Are they on, you know, do they even have that? Do they do that? Do they care? Like, how do you contact them without going there, you know?
Well, you know, there's a website and, you know, it's good to not assume, like, I think that we need to be careful about assumptions about how people live and what they care about and where they are.
Right.
But mostly I just hold myself, you know, responsible. Like, you know, where's the flight money? How am I getting there? When do I have the time to do that, to take days off and go
right,
do that?
Right.
But one day, goddess willing, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, well, thanks for just exploring that with me here.
It's a fundamental part of, like, my tarot practice is to be like, but this place is not perfect. And, you know, our traditions are a little bit whack. And here's why and here's how we can possibly do better.
And that speaks to what you said in the beginning about what healing is it's a never ending process. And here we are looking at this beautiful work of art that also contains so much politics. And we're like, well, what else is there? And, like, you know, what is the healing of this situation is to be continued. And that's, like, kind of indicative of a broader subject. But so I don't know. Is there anything else you want to say on that or share there?
I'm sure I could spend, like, ages and ages and ages and talk about appropriation and, you know, spiritual bypassing and whitewashing. And, you know, honestly, at this point, it's like the information is out there. And I think that the work that those with privilege need to do has been delineated and has been made clear. Those of us who are not doing the work are doing so out of willful ignorance at this point. But, you know, love and light ain't going to get you there. have to work with your shadow. You have to work with what's difficult. You have to work with the people who are with you right now. And so doing that work, and I'm sure like by now everyone's read that gorgeous lightning of a post by Leila Saad, and who is someone everyone should check out. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in doing that work, I know she's facilitating a talk, and she's done a lot of work around that and writing around that as well.
And she has a great podcast.
And Wild Mystic Woman is an awesome podcast.
Awesome yes. podcast, y'all.
Yes.
Yeah, totally, totally. So, you know, before we, I have a feeling we could just like hang out and talk all day.
But, that'd be awesome.
But, you know, maybe there should be a live event someday yeah. where we just hang out and talk all day with everyone. So, I'm just wondering if you want to weave together how tarot influences or assists you in social justice work, if there's a particular angle on that that speaks to you. It doesn't have to either. I mean, I'm just like totally pulling this out.
I think that, you know, it's not so much the tarot and it's not so much herbs and it's not so much crystals or a particular tool. You know, I walk in this world as a Black queer woman, and that's got a whole lot of baggage. And so the fact that I continue to breathe in this world is a political act. And so there was no way that I would approach these tools of healing without engaging that part of myself. And so tying that and not being afraid of speaking about that and not being afraid of kind of stirring the pot or the cauldron in these spaces from this lens, it was just impossible to avoid. It was just impossible to avoid.
Mm-hmm. And why so?
Well, I'm a Black queer woman.
Right? Straight up.
Yeah.
Queer up.
Like, not, it doesn't turn off.
Yep.
So it's always on. And, you know, I've been lucky that I haven't had, you know, anyone just come personally into my world to try to tell me to calm down and relax and all of that good stuff. But not good stuff, bad stuff. But, yeah. You know, I've also intentionally cultivated my community in a way such that, you know, people who do have those opinions are very far away from me. But I will continue to do the work that I do, and I will continue to at least, you know, do my work. So much so that I'm also growing, because I also have positions of privilege and I also have work to do. And so that's the part that at least grows compassion. Even with all the work is that, you know, the knowledge that I'm not perfect. I have work to do. Mm-hmm. I have work to do.
Mm-hmm. Don't we all?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. So, what do you offer and where can people find you?
Ooh, I am at asaliearthwork.com. Asali is spelled A-S-A-L-I, and earthwork is earth and work. I am card slinging. I do tarot and oracle readings where, if you love a reading that's just going to tell you exactly what to do and keep it moving, I am not for you. My style of tarot reading asks a lot of questions and often has what I call soul homework. And so, you know, if you're looking to go deeper, if you're looking to question further, my particular practice of reading the cards means that, you know, when you get a reading from me, you'll always have another place to go. There'll always be a next step because there's always going to be a question you need to answer for yourself. I'm also making teas. My current love is my meditative tarot teas, which are teas inspired by the energy of particular tarot cards. I I'm also writing at a Sally Earthwork on the blog. You can also find me at Little Red Tarot. I have a column there called Ritual and Honey. And I also write tarot scopes for RadicalTarot.com.
Very cool. Very cool.
And if you're in the Twin Cities, you can find some of my stuff at Girl Pawn Shop, which is an awesome queer curated store. And, you know, it pops up in different places, but you can definitely go to girlpawn.com and check it out.
Very cool. And so we'll link to all that in the show notes so everyone can thoroughly dive into your world.
And bless you for all those links.
That's part of what we do here. Yeah. You know, it's that weaving the connections.
Yes.
You know, there's one more question I want to ask you before we sign off here.
Absolutely. Is
was there someone who stepped in as a guide or helper along the way that really helped you shift everything?
Absolutely. I think that my saving grace was finding the practice of Ifa. Mm. And I am part of the temple led by our priestess, Ianifa Ifalade. And her partner is my other godmother, Oyeseke Adeloni. And they really just gathered me together with deepest love and wisdom. And so I credit them with a lot of the lessons. I credit them with being the channels for the portal, you know, and their grace and their wisdom and their kindness and compassion and just deep love for their work and for me. I'm really touched by my spiritual teachers. Mm.
Beautiful. Thank you. Well, this was beautiful and super grateful that you're willing to come on the show. So thanks so much for sharing all this good stuff with us today.
No problem. Thank you for having me on this beautiful, beautiful podcast. I'm so honored.
My pleasure. Thank you all so much for listening. I hope this episode was nourishing and nurturing for you. If you found comfort or healing from this conversation, please share it with a friend. And I want to remind you all, you can get a Grief Journey Spiral Tarot or Oracle Card Spread that Asali put together just for you. And you can get that at dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret to get support from the Oracle, from the Tarot, from the Divine and your guides to get the support on your grief journey of whatever you're grieving right now or whatever unnoticed grief is lingering within you. dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret.